Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
You're listening to the Evening Show podcast with me, Gordon Smart, and the returning producer, Vin, who's had a bit of time away with Ellis and John, who are generally quite successful and funny, which is making me jealous, Vin.
You sound bitter.
I am a little bit bitter. They just cruise through life with their comedian lifestyle.
No, you're right, yeah. They don't do any work.
They do things in the morning, like play football, and then they go and hang around with funnier comedians who tell them funny things, and they all steal each other's jokes. And
you
fall
do
out.
Things in the morning. You cry. You look at the wall.
I look at it on my own in London.
Yeah.
Like Alan Partridge eating cheese. Finn, we've had a brilliant week.
We have, man. It's been great to be back.
It's been good to have you back as well. It's almost like you've planned this somehow. We had great guests all week. I can't believe it, actually. Royal Blood was brilliant on Thursday night. We had Brandon Flowers from The Killers on from his New York hotel room, which was a bit unusual. It's very neat, his New York hotel room, I noticed.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always quite dangerous, I think.
Lots of straight angles.
Yeah, he's an angular man.
Yeah.
Epaulettes, feathers.
Yes.
Moustaches. Nothing's asymmetrical with Brandon Flowers. That's one thing we've learned.
Yeah, spot on.
Who else have we had? Danny Wallace. I love Danny Wallace. He's a great man. We spent a lot of time with Danny when he worked on this radio station years ago. Went off to Benicassim and stuff. He's doing brilliantly. Very proud of him. His kids go to school with Pharrell Williams' kids.
Yeah, yeah.
My kids go to school with a local head case, Moggy's kids.
Oh, Moggy.
Moggy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kevin McLaughlin. He's a great man. Love Moggy. Who else? Josh Homme from the Queens of the Stone Age. What a lovely command of the English language he has.
Yeah, he was playing with his dog, wasn't he?
He was playing with his dog. He said a beautiful thing. He said, his mission statement as a musician is to make every day like Friday. He's thought about that before.
Yeah,
he spoke
that's
to us,
very
hasn't he?
Different to Morrissey, isn't it?
Yeah. What was Morrissey's line?
Every day is like Sunday.
Every day is like Sunday.
Yeah, cloudy and grey.
Vin, Thursday's still available if you want to claim it. Still available, you can have it. Loads of great stuff. And as well, classic albums. We had a great one on Monday, speaking of Morrissey.
Yeah.
Is Dead.
Yeah, that was really nice to play that on the radio, yeah.
We got a lovely response as well, didn't we? People really, really enjoying that. And I think you were in your element as well. You're such a big Smiths fan.
Well, that album in particular, yeah. It's one of my favourite albums ever.
It's such a strong lineup of songs. Boy with a Thorn in His Side is a masterpiece, isn't it?
Yeah. If it didn't have Frankly Mr. Shankly on it, it'd be perfect, I think.
See, I think that's a good thing.
Have you got... Oh, really? So,
I do, yeah. I don't know what it is about it, just having that... It shows the comedy of the Smiths,
yeah,
as well.
Because yeah,
they got a really hard time, right, all the time, for being far too downbeat, shoegaze and misery. Frankly, Mr. Shankly, how can you say that about a band that have written that?
Yeah, that's true. It's a bit of whimsy, isn't it, I guess?
It bothers Johnny Marr, that, apparently. Really bothers. See, apparently he told me that. It does bother him.
Well, the
that people just thought it was all misery.
Every interview
when it was mentioned that they were miserable.
Well, I think
we said
this on the show, didn't we? That actually they're very funny, like funny, witty lyrics, aren't they?
Yeah, and Johnny Marr, in his company, is one of the funniest blokes you'll meet. He's a brilliant lad. I think Noel Gallagher's taken quite a lot from him in his interview techniques. So I think there's always somebody that gives you your inspiration. It's like you and Ellis and John. Their comedy is based. It's all stolen from you.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. We had George Ezra as well, speaking of Ellis and John, didn't we?
George Ezra, what a lovely fella. Another person we've interviewed I just feel like a conduit for Ellis and John. Alt J as well. They were huge fans, weren't they?
They were, yeah, yeah.
They're on another Evening Show podcast if you fancy just having a double down. If you enjoy this, make sure you leave a review, by the way, and tell all your friends. Hope you enjoy it.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Right, that was The Killers, Mr. Brightside. I'm Gordon Smart. This is the Evening Show here on Radio X. Now, I'm thrilled to tell you that we've got one of the greatest frontmen ever to walk the surface of the planet. Here's a brief summary. 7 Grammy nominations, 3 Brits, 4 Enemies, headlined nearly every major festival in the world, headlined every major UK festival, 19 times platinum with their albums, and they wrote one of the best songs of their generation, Mr. Brightside, which you just heard. 5 years on from their last album, The Killers are back, and the frontman, the great man, Mr. Brandon Flowers is on the line. Hello, Brandon.
All right. How's it going?
Brandon, set the scene for us. Where are you right now? Paint a picture for us.
I'm in my hotel room in New York City.
Grand. And are you in the middle of rehearsing, recording, or are you just relaxing in New York?
No, just doing a little bit of work. We played in Philadelphia 2 nights ago.
And how's it feeling being back? Because it's been 5 years, you know. Is it a good feeling of nostalgia, or is it how you remember it 5 years ago, just ready for another holiday already?
No, it was, you know, we toured for the record that came out 5 years ago, we toured for almost 2 years, and so the songs don't feel too distant. But I feel at home, you know. It's nice to get back on the stage, and I remember what I like to do, yeah.
Yeah, because last time I saw you, we were in Benicassim. And I think, like you say, that was right at the end of those 2 years. Then you've gone off and done your solo thing. But have you got that fire back in your belly for doing the Killers thing again?
Oh, yeah, it's always there. And it's I'm proud to be the singer of the Killers, and I love the singing the songs.
Now, Brandon, let's get straight into the single. We've had a listen to it, and we absolutely love it. I think it's brilliant. It's got that wonderful combination of all the great things from the 80s thrown into a mixer, added with a lovely little bit of bass line, and then that Killers magic dust on top. Does it come naturally writing for the Killers again? Do you have to work consciously to make it sound like the Killers?
Not necessarily, but it's nice when you can hear our fingerprint or little touchstones from our past. And I think I hear that in Mark's bass line, and there's something that sizzles about it that maybe was going to remind people of Las Vegas. I don't know, but I love the song.
Yeah, the song's called The Man. Now, who is The Man, Brandon? I believe it is maybe a reference to you as a younger fella.
That's right. I think when we first started, I definitely felt like I was God's gift. And, that just slowly got chipped away at over the years.
And you don't feel like that now?
No, but it was nice to go back and inhabit that person. And I had to do that to really figure out why I am who I am now. And it was fun. It was a great exercise.
Yeah, the single sleeve's lovely. There's a little fella wearing a mask. Who is that young man on the single
sleeve? That's my baby boy, Henry.
That's Henry.
Yeah.
Immortalized forever. That must be a lovely thing for you to have that. And did you not think about casting somebody else, or did you think, I've got to put my boy on there?
No, we thought, it was actually Anton Corbin, the photographer, it was his idea. And I'm just excited about it. You know, I'm trying to explain to my kids, this guy's taking pictures of David Bowie, and, you know, and they just want a root beer float, but it was fun. Pleasure working with him.
And in the grand pantheon and canon of Killers material, how happy are you with this album? Where do you feel it sits amongst the rest of the work you've produced?
It's up there. You know, the only time will tell. I felt pretty strongly about the last one, and then my love waned a little bit. But I feel like I put a lot of work into this one, and there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears and all that. So I'm excited about it.
Well, let's unveil your latest baby to the world then, Brandon. This is the new Killers single.
Oh,
this,
my God.
Nervous feeling for you. This is The Man on Radio X on The Evening Show right now.
All right.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That's the brand new single from The Killers. It's called The Man, and I'm delighted to say that Brandon Flowers is stuck with us by the marvels of modern technology. Brandon, what does it feel like after all these years to unveil a song for the first time? Do you still get the same emotions flowing through you?
Sure, yeah. No, it's a little bit, I feel relieved now. The weight off. There's nothing I can do now.
Yeah, and you've got a big summer ahead again. Do you feel apprehensive about going on the road again, or do you have the same excitement you had 17, 18 years ago?
No, I just keep loving it. It just keeps, the crowds keep growing, and the crowds are more and more familiar with the music, and it's just, I love doing it. I'm lucky I have the best, I know it sounds silly, I have the best job in the world, and I just love it.
What's that conversation going to be like to sort out the set list this time around? Because as more material arrives on the scene, you've got to leave some of your favourite songs out. I mean, is it a diplomatic conversation, or is it Brandon Flowers laying the whole down?
No, we'll talk about it. You know, we want everybody to be happy up there, but we're people pleasers, and we want to, you know, we know what people want to hear, but I think there's a lot on this record that people are going to want to hear too.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've got British Summertime coming up, Brandon. You say you're a people pleaser. There may be another gig lined up. Now, I'm going to give you a monkey rub in a Chinese barn. If you were here, I'd have you in a headlock. Are you going to be playing Glastonbury this year?
Say what?
You've got no idea what a monkey rub or a Chinese barn is.
I don't know
is.
What a monkey, a what?
Let me tell you. A monkey rub is if I got my knuckles and dragged it across your skull to make you say something. Or Chinese barns if I grabbed your wrist and twisted the skin either way. Basically coercing you into telling me something. Unfortunately, you're not here right now, so I can't bully you into telling me. But I want to know if you're doing Glastonbury.
I think we're in Athens the day before, so I don't know. I don't even know if it's possible.
Oh, that's possible, isn't it? 2 hours on a plane.
It's across the water. And
yeah, we're looking closely into Brandon Flowers' eyes right there, right now. I won't bother you anymore. Don't worry, Brandon, don't worry. So, Brandon, one other thing. You're about to head off on the road again. How are the rest of the lads? Are they still as enthusiastic as you are? Because they've had a bit of a longer break, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's everybody's feeling refreshed right now, and we just, like I said, we played in Philly and then in New Jersey the night before, and it was just, the shows were great. Everybody's feeling good.
Excellent, Brandon. Well, look, thanks very much for joining us tonight. I think the new single's absolutely brilliant. Can't wait to hear the album. And will you have time to grow a moustache just in time for turning back up in the UK?
I might, yeah. What do I have? About a month till Hyde Park. I can do it.
You can get one back, no problem at all.
All right.
Brandon, we look forward to seeing the feathers and the epaulettes, and we'll see you really soon.
All right. See you, man.
That's all, man. Cheers, Brandon.
Radio. Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Okay, it appears Lord has been running a secret onion ring review Instagram account, which has been abruptly shut down. Now, let me explain this a little bit more. If you've seen Chicken Connoisseur, you'll know what I'm on about. It's kind of an anonymous version of that, a social media review of delicious, or maybe not so delicious, onion rings. So the account could be described as clandestine. There are no names or faces posted to the account at all, and management have not confirmed it's an official Lord project. But while there's no official word, there is a digital trail of evidence that builds a compelling case. Let me present the evidence to you. Number one, the followers. Before it was taken down, the Onion Rings worldwide account amassed a grand total of 24 followers. One of them is Lord. In fact, Onion Rings worldwide is Lord's most recent follow. Number two, other followers include Lord's friends and associates, Justin Warren, Jimmy Mack and Maddie Budd. Number three, this is compelling. The second onion ring consumed was eaten on board a plane from Tennessee to New York and posted online on Tuesday morning, New Zealand time. Guess who was on a plane and just played at Bonnaroo Music Festival in Tennessee? Indeed, Lord. Four, this onion ring account operator could be based anywhere in the world, but two of the four posts are US-based. Despite that, the word flavour is correctly spelled with a U, the preferred spelling outside the United States, as we all know in the UK, including New Zealand, Lord's birthplace. So in summary, ladies and gentlemen of the Radio X jury, if this is indeed Lord's account, what does it tell us about her? Not really much at all. The most interesting information it provides is that the reviewer didn't know Burger King actually sells onion rings, because it says, good thing I didn't, because they're not good. And that's in the caption. One conclusion I can reach is that we have reported this story because I have a very strong suspicion that producer Vin runs a Lord fan account. He's completely obsessed.
Radio. Radio. X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart. Radio X.
I'm Gordon Smart, this is Radio X, and you are listening to The Evening Show. That was some classic Royal Blood. Without any doubt, one of the best bands to come out of the UK in the last few years. They're in the studio tonight. They've won Brits. Howard Stern and Jimmy Page are huge fans, and they've got a massive loyal following from their debut album. They've got a new album out, How Did We Get So Dark? It is world class. Ladies and gentlemen of Radio X, let's hear it for the weapons-grade rock artillery. Royal Blood are in the house. Look at that. A thunderous round of applause for themselves.
I'm going to clap myself there.
Yeah, do that.
Just for volume's sake, really.
How are we doing, gentlemen? Mike and Ben, in good form?
We're good, yeah. Show last night, we had plenty of friends and family to catch up with. I ended up falling off the drum riser, and I think I've broken my rib, and I have a terrible hangover. But, apart from that, feeling strong.
Ben, you're picking up where you left off, are you not?
Yeah, I'm not actually hungover. I think I'm still drunk.
It's a perfect way to be. It's called sustaining, just keep it
going.
Yeah,
that's it. Consistency.
So suddenly the new album title makes perfect sense then. Yeah, Why Did We Get So Dark? Was it anything to do with recording it in Belgium, or was it just a reflection on how dark things genuinely got?
I think initially it made us laugh as a title. I think we have quite a sort of morbid sense of humour.
Yeah.
But it also is one of our favourite tunes off the record. And I think, yeah, that lyric kind of, we felt like sort of summed up some of the themes in the record, yeah.
One of the most rock and roll stories I've heard from a long time involves your band, and maybe you could tell me if it's true or not, but it involved, I think, maybe a tour manager, hopefully not one of you two, losing a testicle on tour.
That is true, yeah.
Is that true?
It was definitely the most memorable.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it wasn't us sitting here telling you that story.
Ben, we talked to a lot of bands about things they see from on stage, and Royal Blood gigs are mental, right? What's the most ridiculous thing you've seen from the drum riser on stage?
Festivals. That's when you get the real nuts out there, who are dressed as bananas.
Yeah.
Some people crowd surfing in rubber dinghies.
Yeah.
At that.
You must be at the stage now of signing tattoos. Royal Blood tattoos.
You know what? A guy on Instagram There was a photo went up, and he had royal blood tattooed on his forehead.
Oh, what do you say to that?
Nothing.
Just steer clear.
I'm going to encourage that.
Yeah.
I remember we were at some festival with the band The Marmosets. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them, but they brought a guy with them on tour who was a tattoo artist.
Yeah.
And just before we went on stage, we ended up tattooing Sam from The Marmosets across his chest. My name went across his left side of his chest, and Mike wrote Royal Blood over the right side, spelt wrong.
B-L-U-D.
I was going to say, how did you get that bit wrong? Yeah,
it was horrible. It was a horrible thing. I felt really, a proper shame after doing it. I thought, what, you know.
You're going to carry that guilt for the rest
of
your life.
It's a really difficult thing to do as well.
Yeah.
It's sort of, I'm not great with needles either, so.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
So, Royal Blood, we've been keeping another log of riders that bands keep. Has it developed much since you first got together? Or now that you're on the second album and are hugely popular, really successful, have you got some really extravagant and opulent and decadent stuff on there?
It's gone more simple. We've gone more minimalist, right?
Yeah, we're modest chaps, really. I think, you know, one thing a lot of people don't realise about riders is that you pay for them, like the band pay for them.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not free.
Yeah.
So, we checked over the books and we thought, let's make some cutbacks.
Yeah.
Let's make some cutbacks. So, yeah, it's fairly simple, isn't it, Ben?
Just some bottle of tequila.
Some gin, some champagne.
We had a two-door cinema club came in and they told us that they always ask for pornography of the venue's choice or a flavour of the promoter's choice.
That's disgusting.
That's hideous, isn't it?
There's none of that. Yeah.
Grow up.
Yeah, that's a good message there. Is there nothing you can put on there as a little test to the venues to make sure they're paying attention?
We often, the first thing we put on was a signed picture of Ron Burgundy.
Fantastic.
We got a few of them, and then you started doing the gladiators thing, didn't you?
Yeah, different gladiators.
What about John Anderson, contender?
Yeah, he was on there, yeah.
Good.
I like the idea of, like, actual people being on the rider, you know. What a wolf from Gladiator, please.
Yeah. Have him washed and taken to the dressing room.
Yeah. Freshly bathed wolf, please.
I tell you what, is there part of you that's slightly apprehensive about going out and doing this again?
I think that it's so exciting doing it and all the stories that we're going to be able to tell after doing it that... It's exciting.
I know that the crew members are a little bit nervous this time round.
That's a good sign of things to come. Right, gents, you okay to stick around a little bit longer?
I've actually got to get out of here. I've got some stuff I've got to do.
No problem, mate.
And I've got this other mate called Mike who can join us later. Yeah. So.
Well, we've got a game for you in just a second as well, which is going to sort out once and for all who is the real star of the band.
Brilliant.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
So every Monday on the Evening Show here at Radio X, I do a classic album session. I delve a little bit deeper into an album that we love here at Radio X. We've been doing this for 6 months now, and I cannot believe that we haven't had a chance to talk about The Smiths yet. But tonight, we're going to talk about The Queen Is Dead, released on the 16th of June, 1986, so 31 years ago. And going back through it in the last couple of days, listening to it, really is a classic album. And one of the best, I think, Britain has ever produced. What a songwriting partnership Morrissey and Marr were. It got to number two in the UK as Gone Gold, and in 2013, NME named it the greatest album of all time. What a track listing as well. We're listening back to this last couple of days. The Queen Is Dead, I Know It's Not Over, which I know producer Vin absolutely loves. Cemetery Gates, Big Mouth Strikes Again, The Boy With A Thorn In His Side, There Is A Light That Never Goes Out. That's just an amazing collection of songs, isn't it, Vin? I mean, I know you're a huge fan, producer Vin. You've not been around for a couple of weeks, but what an album to come back to and talk about.
It's such a treat to talk about this album. I Know It's Over is probably my favourite Smith song.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's so deep, it's so charged, I think if you don't like The Smiths, it's never going to convert you because it sounds a bit morose, but really it's funny, it's witty, it's charming, it's everything I love about The Smiths.
That's one of the things that winds Johnny Marr up, is that people always think they're a morose, miserable band, but actually there's a lot of humour in them.
Yeah, they're very sort of fey and preening and tongue-in-cheek, I guess is the phrase. Yeah,
yeah, and they were working with Stephen Street on this very, very early on in his career, because Johnny Marr really did sort of take the reins and then do a lot of the production work for a number of reasons, mainly because he kind of became a self-appointed manager, the A&R man. He had to do everything for the band at the time, and he did a lot of the production, but he started writing the songs during the Meet His Murder tour, which was about 2 years before this album came out, and Andy Rourke and Mike Joyce were just to do the sound check before they went on stage and work out how the songs would fall together. Imagine being a fly in the wall when they were doing that, as those songs came together. It would be amazing to see. So Johnny Marr, though, he said that it came very easily to him. It was very natural, the process of writing. And I've just, like I keep talking about, I've just listened to his audiobook of his autobiography, and he said that some guitars just have the songs already in them. And he said at this point in his career, the songs were just falling out of him. And you can tell, because that track listing is so special. It is probably Morrissey and Marr at their best, though, isn't it? Then, wouldn't you say?
I think it's peak Morrissey and Marr. I think you look at it with hindsight, and it's sort of maybe, perhaps it's the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
But this album is just them both hitting their heights, competing with each other. It's a little bit like that Lennon-McCartney thing, where they're both trying to outdo each other.
Yeah.
Johnny Marr would write all the songs, then drop them over at Morrissey's house, and Morrissey would add the lyrics, wouldn't he?
But he wouldn't speak to me, put them through the letterbox,
which
I loved that. And also, Johnny Marr had later said that he preferred the music to the lyrics, which is quite a barbed comment, and, you know, a bit of confidence about that.
Yeah, absolutely. But then it just shows how good a guitarist he was, you know?
And also, but I think Morrissey's at his peak here. I think that the songwriting and the lyrics are world class. And this, you didn't know at the time that it would be the penultimate album, right? But you could tell that the cracks were beginning to form. And when you listen, if you haven't read Johnny Marr's book or you haven't listened to the audiobook, go and listen to it, because it's beautiful to hear about that time. He summarises it beautifully. But yeah, it really is a special moment for them. And they're at the peak of their powers. And Vin as well, The Queen Is Dead. What an opening title track that is.
It's perfect. It's perfect, yeah. Smiths.
It's perfect, Smiths.
It's that sort of punky, brash, assertive opening. It's got that sort of drum sample on it, that loop. But then Morrissey comes in and he's all camp and he's all preening and he's, you know, he's being very self-deprecating, and it's that perfect mix. It's exactly what makes the Smiths the Smiths.
And the production in this as well, this is a sign of Johnny Marr's innovation and creativity and how he likes to make things happen in a pretty special way that only he could do. So this is going to get into it now, right? A double play from the Smiths, from The Queen Is Dead. I'm going to do Big Mouth for you, followed by There Is A Light That Never Goes Out. This is magical.
The Evening Show, classic album of the week. X.
I was only joking when I said
Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
The Evening Show. Classic album of the week.
X.
Well, that was magical. Two songs back-to-back from The Queen Is Dead by The Smiths. 16th of June, 1986, 31 years ago. Got a message in there from Phil Jones. He said, oh my God, 1986, where the hell did those 31 years go? I didn't quite get The Smiths then, but right up my street now. Thanks very much for that message, Phil. And also, Macca got in touch with a video of what looks like somebody running around swinging flowers around their head in true Smiths style. Brilliant stuff. Thank you very much for those messages. The Queen Is Dead, 31 years old. Sounding absolutely superb tonight. Did you know There Is A Light and Big Mouth were written in tandem? The two songs share the same key as well as similar chords, and the label wanted There Is A Light to be the lead single, but Johnny Marr put his foot down because he was pretty much managing the band at the time, and said that Big Mouth was the one because it was a bit more upbeat. If you've listened or read Johnny Marr's autobiography, one thing that comes across loud and clear is his love of Kirsty MacColl. She was a really, really good friend, and I didn't know this, but she originally sang the backing vocal, but it was considered really weird by Johnny Marr and was replaced with a sped up vocal by Morrissey in the final mix, for which he is credited as Ann Coates on the sleeve. Did you know that, Vin? I know you're a massive fan. I think you did, didn't you?
I'd heard that before, but I had no idea that Kirsty MacColl was on the song.
She did loads with him, yeah. He's one of Johnny Marr's best friends. She used to go and stay with him all the time and write
songs.
Yeah, she's a talented woman, There Is Light That Never Goes Out was released as a single in France in 1987, but this seems like madness to me. It wasn't released in the UK until 1992, 5 years after the Smiths split up, and I think the record label at the time, Rough Trade, might have had something to do with that and reclaiming some money. Morrissey was really unhappy as well about the synthesised strings being used, but I think it was down to lack of budget at the time. And I tell you what, There Is A Light That Never Goes Out, if you speak to any music journalist, they will tell you that is one of the finest songs that's ever come out of this country. One of the greatest songs of all time.
It's a perfect song.
It's a great song.
It's perfect. There's nothing wrong with it.
And every time you listen to it, you hear the lyric about the 10-ton truck. Where did that come from in a man's head? It's magical, isn't it? And Cemetery Gates as well, Morrissey's direct response to journalists who criticised his use of text by Oscar Wilde and others. He was accused of plagiarism. He was always in the middle of a scandal, wasn't he, Morrissey? But there was that Oscar Wilde quote, "Talent borrows, Genius Steals, which has been used for a few Manc songwriters over the years, but it's also been etched into vinyl in the grooves of Big Mouth Strikes Again, which carries on as a Smiths tradition. They released some music for Record Store Day this year, and there were some messages about Trump delivered in exactly the same way. Loved that. The Queen is Dead, the Smiths, classic albums here on Radio X. If you've got a suggestion for one for us to do in the future on a Monday night, then get in touch, 83936 and at Radio X.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Mike Kerr and Ben Thatcher are still with me. Now, there's been a curious anomaly in the world of showbiz. A paradox has occurred where two famous men share the same name. One is footballer and former Millwall, Leicester City and Manchester City hard man Ben Thatcher. The other is one of the finest sticksmen in rock and roll, Worthing Rhythm Machine, also Ben Thatcher.
And hard man, you forgot hard man in it as well.
Double hard gentleman.
Thank you. And he's from Rustington.
Yeah. Well, I was about to, I might have that wrong. I thought, oh, right, not quite.
Because he's got the tattoo as well.
Yeah. Anyway. I apologise.
Thank you.
Now, Ben, the footballing Ben happens to be a good friend of mine, right? And he recorded this message for you.
Hello, I'm Ben Thatcher, the ex-average footballer, the purveyor of a late tackle, and occasionally, the very late tackle. Now, let's get something straight. There's only one Ben Thatcher, and the only other Thatcher that comes close is Maggie. Now, I've heard you're good on the pots and pans, Ben, but that don't impress me. So here's a polite reminder in your lug-hole. Get down Somerset House, change your name, or I'll be spilling some of that raw blood, and it'll be lights out for you.
I should point out, you're a big football fan, you're a Brighton fan.
He sounds like
I'm not sure who this man is, but he's very rude. I actually bumped into him on the stairs, and because I don't know anything about football, you introduced me to Ben Thatcher, and I went, oh, we've got to get a picture. And I only took a picture of Ben and Ben, because they're the same name.
Yeah.
So no idea.
I should point out, Ben, he's a massive fan of Royal Blood and he thinks the band's superb.
That's very kind of him.
And I'm sure he's good to dig up some wonderful Brighton and Hove signed memorabilia for you.
Oh, I would love that.
You must be celebrating, though. It's a massive moment.
Back, of course.
Up in the Premiership, first time in 34 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. I can't really express through radio the feeling right now of it, but yeah, we're going up.
And Mike, you're totally lukewarm about this as well, because you're a non-football man.
Well, you know what? Since as it's progressed and Ben's excitement level has gone up and up, you know, I can't help but radiate off the heat of it all, to be honest with you. Even though, you know, I am somewhat indifferent to football.
Well, you've got Ben Thatcher on the tour crew now. If you need security, there's quite a threatening man who can join you on board.
He sounds lovely.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Gentlemen from Royal Blood, I'm writing a book called Slash Gordon, right? It's all about the most famous person you happen to have stood beside at a urinal. It was inspired by Sean Connery. I've always wondered who the most famous person he stood at a urinal beside. Can you share a story that can continue my book, Royal Blood and Famous Urinal Encounters?
Can.
Here we go, Ben Thatcher.
Chris Martin.
Hey! It's good.
Yeah, Chris Martin.
Probably quite a healthy sort of vegan diet, so there's a good chance there's quite a strong asparagus odour. Was any more colour you can add
I imagine it was fairly transparent.
Yeah, healthy.
Well hydrated,
not,
I reckon.
Not like you two now, which would be like an acrid kind of iron brew consistency.
And it'd be like acid.
Mike, what about you? Have you got one?
Probably me, isn't it?
Probably Ben Thatcher from Royal Blood. Yeah. Sorry, no, the other Ben Thatcher.
Other Ben Thatcher, yeah. I've got a little game we've devised for you here at Radio X. On Royal Blood night, Ben and Mike are going to stick around and have a little go at that in just a second.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm thrilled to say I've got a rock icon of his generation on the phone, a flamed hair powerhouse of a musician towering over his peers. He's worked with a stable of talent including Arctic Monkeys, Iggy Pop, Dave Grohl, John Paul Jones and of course Queens of the Stone Age. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Josh Homme. Here he is.
Oh, wow. I didn't know who you were talking about for a second. I'm on the phone, though, man. So what are you talking about?
Josh, can you set the scene for us? Because I heard you were on the school run when you were doing this, which isn't really the most normal way to hear an introduction like that in the morning.
No. I was playing with my dog, Bob.
Ah, Bob the dog. What kind of dog's Bob?
He's a Staffordshire Bull Terrier.
I thought he might be. I didn't think it would be a poodle. That wouldn't have been in character for you.
Well, he sort of looks like you put a terrier in the dryer and shrunk him down a little bit. He's like a two-door dog, not like a four-door, you know what I mean?
Would he still win in a fight if it came down to it, though?
You know, he's a lover, not a fighter, much like myself.
Josh, we're really excited about this. There's new music on the go, 4 years since the last album, 17 years since Rated R. Are you still striving to redefine your sound? Are you still trying to do things differently and make it all new?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what the seventh record really is about. It sort of dawned on me that, like, if you're lucky enough to have a sound that's your own, if you're not careful, by the seventh record, it could become parody, like a cartoon character on the wall, you know? And so I think this record is about hanging on to what's important about us, but reappropriating how that sounds, you know what I mean? I think in a certain way, the records get a little harder to make as they go on because, you know, I used to think I was creating something that wasn't there, and now I sort of feel like I'm mining something out of myself a little more.
Yeah.
You know, but I also understand that the way that I used to try to protect myself is no good, and that the sort of the more vulnerable and honest and not shielded it is, the better it can be, you know?
Yeah, it's not easy to do that. I see that Mark Ronson produced it as well. So did he try and get a contract together that insisted on trumpets appearing at some stage in this album, or have you managed to fend that off?
Well, he had no idea of my own horniness. you know, because for years, since Rated R, I've masked horns as guitars and utilized horn sections, and so where Ronson has a trumpet, I have a tuba, you know?
Yeah, I raise you your trumpet and I give you a tuba.
Yeah. You know, I what I love about tuba is somebody was tinkering around with it and then they looked up and they were like, yeah, I'm done. This is it. And they made that thing that you, or a sousaphone where you actually have to wear it, you know?
Too right. Well, Josh, we're going to play this new single for you now. Right, here it is, Queens of the Stone Age, the way you used to do on the evening show here at Radio X.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Way you used to do.
That was the new Queens of the Stone Age single, The Way You Used to Do. You're listening to The Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart, and I've still got Josh Homme on the phone. Josh, that sounds like a really profound name for a song, that, The Way You Used to Do. What does that mean?
Well, you know, the line before says, come and love me now, like the way you used to do. I think it's a love song. It's about, you know, I try not to let things like bring me down, you know. I try to walk on the sunny side of the street.
Yeah, does that play a big part in it? Because you've got two kids now, I think, haven't you? And is your wife Brody, is that right? Yeah, does that play a part in the sunny disposition of your life and the way the album's coming across?
Yeah, well, I got three kids actually, and you know, I guess I'm always looking for something in the morning to like to stave off any grumpiness, because I'm not so much a grumpy person in the morning, and so I found that Cab Calloway and Dean Martin are like the ways, or 20s jazz is the way to start the morning. I think good, you can't listen to Mambo Italiano and then yell at somebody.
Well, that's funny you mention that, actually, because you spent a bit of time with Iggy Pop over the last couple of years, and I listened to that and I definitely hear a wee bit of Iggy in that music somewhere. Which is that something you'd agree with? Is that something that's just seeped into the music by proxy
now? So, I think Iggy is the pinnacle for me. I feel that Iggy is something to aspire to. In the case of playing with Iggy, you know, they say you should never meet your heroes. Well, that's absolutely wrong. You know, Iggy is a one of a kind, and so I was like proud to stand next to him. You know what I mean?
The new single's brilliant, Josh. We love it. But tonight on the show, it's Royal Blood Night here at Radio X, and we're celebrating their new album. I know you're a massive Anglophile, and I see that Royal Blood are supporting you as well. How highly do you rate them?
Well, you know, if I'm being honest, I only know a little bit about them, but the little I've heard, I quite like, and I look forward to like getting to see them and know them in that way. You know, getting to know them under the bright lights.
Good stuff. One last thing, Josh, just before you go. We're looking at your tour dates here. Can we expect any little surprise appearances over in UK before the end of the year? Is there anything else still to announce?
Well, I love surprises, and one of the greatest ways to learn to make a secret is to learn to keep one, and so... but wouldn't it be amazing if we just turned up at some festival? That would be crazy.
Wouldn't that be outstanding, Josh? Listen, thanks so much for doing this tonight. The new single is outstanding, The Way You Used to Do. All the best on tour, and we'll see you when you're over in the UK next.
You got it, man.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Here's a story that made me chuckle today. Eddie Vedder has been recounting an epic pub story, the kind of thing that he could live on for years. His tale of the night, Sir Paul McCartney accidentally punched him square in the chops. So, in Eddie's words, I was fortunate enough to be with Paul McCartney in a corner of a Seattle hotel bar and talking stories. He was kind of illustrating how he hit this guy, and when he did that, he shot out his left arm as if he was hitting this guy, and I was standing there and I got hit. He didn't quite pull back the punch, you see. He went on. As I was listening, I was thinking, Paul McCartney just hit me in the face and it hurt. Well, Eddie, you know, nothing powers a punch like Quorn. Macca's got a mean hook for a vegan. This is Macca's victim, Eddie Vedder, and the Pearl Jam anthem, Alive.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This is Radio X and you are listening to The Evening Show. I'm still joined, thank God, by Mike Kerr and Ben Thatcher from Royal Blood. That was the comeback single, Lights Out. So, boys, I'm really obsessed with this thing on YouTube called Isolated Drumming. Have you heard it?
No, but I've got a good guess of what it is, right? Yeah.
So it came from the Stone Roses, so they strip out all the music except for Rennie's drums, and it's magic listening to it. I don't know if it's been done to Royal Blood yet, but I'd love to hear it when it's just you drumming. So it got us thinking, right? What I love in Lights Out is this bit. Let me just play that for you. Can't help you get air drumming. It almost goes into Daft Punk there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Keep going to Daft Punk there. But you can't help listening to it without making a fool of yourself playing air drums, right? So we thought we'd sort out a little game, right? This is Name That Song. Very simple game, Name That Song. Mike, we're not going to leave you out, right? So I want you to listen to this and tell me if you can guess the song. Same goes for you, Ben. But to make it interesting, I'm going to flip it round. So you're going to guess the drum part. Ben, you can guess the bass part.
Right.
Simple game?
Okay, yeah, cool. So we've got to guess the tune.
Guess the tune based on just the isolated part.
Mike is going to absolutely nail this.
I don't know, because I'm not very good with song titles. But let's get a
Here we go. So let's give it a go, right? Okay, right. Mike, you first. Are you ready for this?
I think so. Let's go.
Right, polish the ears and listen to this.
Rock and roll, Led Zeppelin.
Oh, he's got it straight away. Here it is. Of course it was. Straight away. No doubt. Absolutely. Right, so Ben, are you ready? One up already. Right, he won the toss, he went first, right?
Okay.
So listen to this, see if you can get it.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, Around the World.
Do I even need to play the second part of that? I think we should, yeah, just to confirm it. This is Flea, Red Hot Chili Peppers. No problem, they're good at this game. Right, okay.
Classic.
Back to you, Mike. Okay, so it's one all. It's being hotly contested, this game, right? Back to Mike Kerr from Royal Blood. Here we go.
Arctic Monkeys, Teddy Picker.
He's got it straight away. No problem at all. It's currently 2-1.
It's because we wrote that song. That's why they're still around today.
Okay, right, let's see. This is. I think you'll get this one, Ben.
Yeah?
I think you'll get this one, yeah.
Is it Royal Blood?
Not yet.
Lights Out?
Not yet. Here we go.
My Generation.
Absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
Mr. Entwistle. No problem at all. Right, so what's that? 2-2?
2-2.
That's another very easy one, Mike Kerr. See if you get this. Of course you do.
Phil Collins, In the Air Tonight.
It's the Dairy Milk advert. Sorry, you're wrong.
Sorry.
Very good. Right, so we're in that wonderful position now there, Ben, where if you don't get this...
He wins.
Are you ready?
Yes.
I think you get this.
Yeah, it's Queens of the Stone Age.
Hold on. Has he got the title of the song?
It's No One Knows.
Well, it's easy. 3-3, so I'm going to have to give you both a bottle of whiskey.
Yes.
You know what?
Come on, high five.
What we've done there is we've shone a light on the relationship between one of the tightest duos in music, and it's proved that it's absolutely watertight.
There we go.
Thank you.
I envisage you too.
You made us look good.
I think we've done
quite
well.
You could have been really hard on us.
We've got more, but we'll just leave it at that. Okay.
Let's end on a high.
Yes, let's.
Radio. X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
You've played some incredible shows over the last few years, gents, but I'd like to know about the worst gig you've played.
The worst gig.
I know exactly what one it is.
Do you?
Depreston.
Oh dear. Take us through it, Ben. Walk us through it.
It was early Royal Blood days, and we were in a venue in Preston, which the name Depreston obviously came about. But it was pretty miserable. It was raining, and we're in this little venue where
hang on a minute, I don't know if it was a, we can call it a venue, can we? It was more, it was a sort of a restaurant.
Yeah. Kebab house.
Yeah, we were interrupting people's dinner.
Oh no. The sound guy wasn't there. He was turning up pretty much as we played.
Right.
Out of his mind, not on planet Earth.
Yeah.
And there was about three people that came to see us, and the rest were trying to enjoy their dinner.
The Royal Blood sound might not be the best accompaniment to garlic bread and chicken Kievs.
No, it might put you off your food.
Yeah, it's a bad gig. Gents, you've done an awful lot of interviews recently, so I'd like to ask you, is there one question you haven't been asked that you'd like to be asked, and what is it?
It's probably how did you make so much noise for two people?
Yes,
that's my favourite question.
Yeah. I like it when people ask how does it feel. That's a good one. It's really hard. They say something and then they go, "How did it feel?"
I know.
It felt like all my blood turned into butter.
You can have some snap answers for now, can't you? Yeah, it felt
what
like.
What haven't we been asked? There's probably more we haven't been asked than we have been asked.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
That is a fact.
What would you like to be asked, Ben? You'd probably like to be asked a bit more about football.
Yeah.
You love football now.
I do love football.
More than ever, actually.
I like talking about, space and stuff like that.
Okay, really deep.
Yeah.
You are still drunk, aren't you?
A little bit.
Recording techniques.
Yeah.
Like, there's more, nerdy studio stuff.
Do you like that?
We're definitely, I think this time round we're a bit more clued up about, I think, the first time round we didn't necessarily know that if you moved the mic in a different room or in a different place it would sound that dramatically different, but... Yeah, we definitely got more into it.
Things that can lead to a world of trouble, though. If you like Fleetwood Mac got themselves into a 6-month recording cycle where the microphone was 2 inches away from the floor because it made a different noise, and suddenly you spent £4 million on half a song.
We did the Bowie thing at one point where you get 10 microphones all about 3 foot apart going on and on and on, and then they all have a gate on them, so the louder you sing, the further mic picks up.
Oh.
And it was amazing.
Yeah.
That was definitely we couldn't have done that on the first record.
Do you
the first half of a record cost £300 to make, and then suddenly you're like, yeah, can we need 10 of the best microphones in the world, equidistant apart, and then you go, but we're not going to use it yet.
Well, you know what, after the second album I'm sure there's a good chance of it. Gents, congratulations, you've got another amazing album up your
sleeve.
Thank
you, man.
And I think the live shows sound like one broken rib, headaches, hangovers. It's going to be another great ride, isn't it?
It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, keep it going, boys, and all the best.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. Here is the new one from Royal Blood, I Only Lie When I Love You, on Radio X.
Radio
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
I'm thrilled, delighted and honoured to have the company of a great, great man. He's a fellow Scot educated in Dundee, a wonderful author, a seriously impressive broadcaster, a father of three, a globetrotter, I think I can call you as well. Danny Wallace is in the studio. Two men
very
clapping
much.
Danny Wallace.
Just two guys in a green room just clapping me for trotting the globe.
Danny, you remember the days of three people clapping a famous person in the studio?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It is, it's a necessary part of radio.
You know, Danny, we'll talk about the book a lot in a second, but I think we have to catch up because you belong in this room.
This exact room, hours
in here. How has it changed?
Well, it's a lot nicer than it was.
Still green.
Yeah, it used to be like a sixth form common room. just a dirty carpet, coffee mugs everywhere. The glass window that we can see here looking out over Leicester Square used to have a massive crack in it. Apparently, legend said it was Johnny Vaughan who just lost it one morning and wanted to see whether he could break the glass.
Did you smash anything in here, Danny?
No, I dropped a mug once, but it bounced. I was still told off for a slight stainage.
I seem to remember there being a keg in here that had your name on it, and it just didn't go anywhere for a long time. You left the keg of beer.
We left the keg of beer. I think you might have been romanticising that and making me seem more rock and roll. I think it was an empty helium canister.
It was a pink helium canister. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
But I like how you've just gone, we'll sort of rock that story up a bit.
Well, as you know, Danny, I worked in the tabloid newspaper industry for a long time, so We never let the facts get in the way of a very good story. But Danny, you know, I should remind people, if they don't know, you were the breakfast show host here for the best part of 3 years, I think it was.
Something like that. Almost two, it was. But it was just a great time. It's such a... I mean, you know, it's all slick and amazing now. It was very sort of shambolic back then.
Well, we got to spend some great time together as well. I remember we were talking about the Stone Roses earlier on. They're playing Wembley this weekend. And I remember watching the Roses with you at Benicassim.
Yes.
On radio duty. And it was a really magical moment, looking around over your shoulder at all these great people from XFM at the time, or Radio X as it's now known. And you were there enjoying it. And that's just something nobody can take from us, Danny.
No one can take it. No one would want to take it from us. Because the next morning, I mean, you were fine because... you could sleep in. I had to get up to broadcast for no apparent reason from an empty car park at 6 a.m. in just in Spain.
Yeah.
I was expecting some kind of studio, and they showed me. They went, "This is it. This is the car park you'll be broadcasting from." And it was just you know, a breakfast show in which we talked to slightly drunken sort of. You know, ramblers.
People,
ramblers is not the
in
right
a pickle. I think
people in a pickle. That's what it was.
And
yeah.
I think, fortunately, the time you went, they'd taken away the backstage swimming pool, which was human soup.
Yes. No. Well, I'm very pleased that they did. Yeah.
Danny, you've travelled over from LA to be with us.
That's right.
Which I love saying.
Yeah.
and you look remarkably fresh. You do. You look like you're enjoying the LA lifestyle. You look really healthy.
Well, you know, you do get a little bit healthier there because I live up a massive hill.
Right. Yeah.
So I've just got to walk constantly, and everything takes forever.
Yeah.
In that, it's a great place. It's a wonderful place, but you get used to driving everywhere. You know, they always say that about LA. You get used to driving, and it's the kind of place where I went to Toys R Us the other day to try and get something for my son, and they said they didn't have it there. Yeah. And I said, "Well, where's the next one?" And it was like 11.5 miles away. But you just go, okay, and you get in the car. And I was thinking, would I ever have done that in London? No, you don't go to the corner shop and you're like, "We've run out of milk." And I'm like, "Well, I'll just pop out to Heathrow and get some more. It's no problem." Yeah. But over there, you just do. And it's. What's good about it as well is you see all these massive celebrities, but in very, very, like, mundane situations.
Yeah.
It's like a classic texter.
Yeah.
Well, you know, where have you seen a celebrity in a mundane? So, you know, in the past couple of weeks, I've seen Jeremy Renner in a pharmacy. I see Pharrell on the school run.
Yes, I've got to ask you about this
A
second. Yeah,
but you see them all wandering around. Charlize Theron in a park.
Do they come up to you and say, Danny Wallace?
No, they're very respectful of...
I saw you on ITV2. Remember?
Yeah, that's right.
That guy, Gordon Smart, came on. You asked him questions about celebrity.
Yes, exactly. No, they respect my privacy, which is wonderful, because I don't want Charlize Theron, you know, bothering me.
You don't need that. You don't need that. Danny, you've written a brilliant book, and we're going to talk about it in just a second, but we've chosen a song that I think is quite apt for the meaning of the book.
Okay.
We're going to play something you played often back in your days on the radio here. Radiohead and Karma Police.
Very nice.
Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radiohead, Karma Police on the mighty Radio X. Is 16 minutes past 8 and I am Gordon Smart. Oh, it feels good, Gordon.
Oh, Danny, it's like old times.
Oh, it feels good.
It was just perfect.
Huh? How about that?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't do a weather check. I didn't sort of... I didn't say what else is coming up on the show because I've no idea. I know that you've got the new Everything coming up a bit later on.
Very good, yeah. Huh? You've got your book coming up as well, Danny.
And of course, yeah, I could say anything now because I could say it is the greatest book of all time, and then I can use that quote on the book.
It's like how it used to work when I worked at the Sun. You know, I just write that quote and I'll put it in the paper for you.
Yeah, nice.
Danny, I've been reading your new book. And I have to say, I'm thoroughly enjoying it as a man who struggles with everyday confrontation and awkwardness and rudeness. You have come up with something very good that I think a lot of people will enjoy and relate to and understand. But you've done it in a way with a lot of science and seriously good talking head type characters in there. You know, there's some genuine intelligence behind this, which I was impressed by, because you could quite easily just make this Room 101 and be angry at people. But you have written a book, I should say, I Can't Believe You Just Said That, and it was inspired by an awkward moment in a hot dog shop.
I was trying to buy a hot dog, Gordon, and have you ever tried to buy a hot dog?
Yes.
It's easy, isn't it?
It's simple. Yeah.
So easy. You get the money, the appropriate money, you go to the hot dog place and you say, "I'd like a hot dog," and they say yes, and they give you the hot dog, and that's it. It should be an unremarkable thing in your day. And I was in this, I won't say where, but a place, a town, and there was a diner and it sold hot dogs, and I wanted one. and I went to ask for the hot dog, and I was met with just a barrage of unbelievable rudeness that really, you know, when someone's so rude to you, it seems to break every single rule. And you are confused, you're confounded, you're a bit bewildered. You don't know if you've done something wrong or if they're in the wrong. And you try to kind of placate them, because all you want is the hot dog.
In front of your children, if I'm
in front, yeah, of my son in particular, who also wanted a hot dog. And to cut a long story very short, I was ejected from the premises without a hot dog.
Yeah.
And I'd waited and waited for this hot dog. And it got to the point where we were shoved outside. She'd made me pay up front, which you don't do normally for a hot dog. So I was trapped and made to wait for far too long, and made my case for, you know, asking where my hot dog was. And she said, you know what, I've had enough. And I was thrown out, banned from this diner. And I'm standing outside in the drizzle, hungry, hot dogless, thinking, what happened there? And it played on my mind and it wouldn't go away. The next day I did something insane, which was I was driving past the diner and it was dark and it was empty. It was after hours. There was no one there. And I found myself flipping off a building.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is not normal behaviour for a grown man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why is this concerning me so much? And I'd find myself just having these little outbursts. I'd be driving with my wife and just out of nowhere, I'd just go, I was unbelievable, that woman.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't leave me. And I thought, why is this? And so I tried to exorcise my demons by writing like a 300-word TripAdvisor review. And it turned into an 85,000-word book.
Yeah.
All about trying to buy a hot dog, except not. Because then it grew into kind of a study on rudeness. And I look at this one moment from every angle, the hot dog. And I try and work out whether it was me or whether it was her, or whether it's all of us.
Yeah.
And I discovered some very unusual things.
Oh, I have to say, there's a part of the book that's really caused me some terrible nightmares, but a man who's dead, a doctor who's dead for half an hour, and he found himself on the lip of hell.
Yeah. Dr. Rajiv Party wrote a wonderful book. He's a cardiologist, and he found himself kind of under the knife one night, an emergency situation. And he found himself... well, like you say, having an out-of-body experience and turning up in hell. And I'll tell you, it sounds awful. I mean, it was the last thing he needed. And he's walking through hell, he says, and there's all demons and things circling him. And the screams, Gordon, the screams of tormented souls. And Satan himself is you know, on his way to deal with Dr. Party. And... like, in that situation, I would probably, I'm ashamed to say, I'd probably be perturbed.
Yeah.
I'd be, you know, I would be a little scared. Yeah. But Dr. Rajiv Party, the first thing that came across his mind, the first thing he thought about was a day recently when he'd been a little bit rude to a lady. He'd been a bit short with her.
This was his punishment.
That was his punishment. But also, that was the only thing he could think about, just being slightly short with a lady. Yeah. And so rudeness had really, really affected him. And I think it gets into all our... like, we all have different... all have different kind of standards of rudeness. There's a story in the book about a guy who joined ISIS.
Yeah.
And he went over there to well, bring down, you know, the very tenets of Western civilization. And he was really geared up for it. He was so looking forward to it. And he went over there and he was so annoyed when he found out how rude they all were.
Who'd have believed it?
Yeah, they're so rude. They don't queue, he says.
Wear each other's shoes?
They wear it. They just take your shoes.
Yep.
When you put your shoes down and you have a pray and you turn up, and there's some other fellas taking your shoes and walked off. It gets worse than that.
Yeah.
They would sometimes take his phone off charge and just use the charger themselves.
Well, that's straight to hell.
Exactly. I'd have been straight down to ISIS HR.
No virgins.
It's just, so it shows that everyone is affected by, you know, rudeness in some way or another.
As we slightly just play a track in underneath you to put it into your
yeah.
I wasn't rude, Danny.
No, it's
this
fine.
This is the Pixies now on Radio X.
Radio.
Radio.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
This 24-year-old has a number one album under his belt. He's played Saturday Night Live, played with Robert Plant, and he calls Sir Ian McKellen a very good friend. I've also just found out that he's a massive fan of Ellis and John. I have to say as well, he's also cultivated and owns one of the most formidable fringes in music. He's the envy of musicians worldwide. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. George Ezra.
Hey, hello.
He's here. George, set the scene. Where are you right now? But paint the picture for us. What are you doing?
I'm looking out over a very beautiful blue sky, London, at my kitchen table.
Very good.
Very nice.
George, let's get straight into the new single, Don't Matter Now. You know, it hasn't really been what you could describe as a cheery time for the world in the last 6 months or so. So did you deliberately set out to write a very upbeat track?
No. Well, I did. But where I should start is that song was actually written at the tail end of 2015.
Yeah.
When I look back, the things socially we were worried about seem quite nominal now. It kind of is a song that has made more sense to me as time has gone on. And when I first wrote it, it was me writing a song for myself, kind of me telling myself to chill out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of actually, over the last 18 months, for the first time, I started having little bouts of anxiety, which is what it is, I guess. But the song was always just me trying to remind myself to chill out. And then I started to play it to friends, and it seemed that they kind of took something from it, which is nice.
It feels like you found something pretty special there for the festival circuit. It's going to be great. I'm going to play it for you now as well, George. On Radio X now, this is the brand new George Ezra single, Don't Matter Now. It's a summer belter.
Radio X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That's the new George Ezra single on Radio X, Don't Matter Now. I'm Gordon Smart. You're listening to the Thursday Night Evening Show. I hope you're having a lovely night. And I tell you what, George Ezra feels like lovely company for a Thursday evening. George is still with us. How are you, George?
I'm brilliant, thank you. It's very surreal hearing the song now played out to everybody.
I'm writing a book, George. It's called Slash Gordon, and it's based on famous people I've happened to bump into in an awkward fashion at the urinals over the years doing my job. Now, you've had a really good run the last few years, festivals, you've invited to all sorts of award ceremonies. Have you got a story you can share with us about the most famous person you might have bumped into at urinal?
I've got two.
Fire away.
So, are you aware of the singer Johnny Flynn?
Yes, guitarist.
Yeah, and he was a huge part of my musical adolescence. And on the first campaign, I was queuing for an EasyJet flight, and there's that horrible bit where you're queuing to get on the plane, and no one's got any time for each other. And I saw Johnny Flynn, and I started to, you know, get a bit panicky, sorting out my eyebrows, making sure I look presentable. But then I didn't have the nerve to go and say hello to him. Then I was at the urinals. Who are they? Then Johnny Flynn came and stood next to me, and I said, well, this is even worse. I can't introduce myself now. But the other one, I was behind, backstage. I was walking to the toilet, and Tom Jones,
yes,
was walking to the toilet as well. And his son is his manager. So there was a nice, you know, oh, Dad, this is George, and, you know, da-da. And I won't go into too much detail. I feel like when your name's as big as Tom Jones, you deserve a bit of privacy.
Thank you very much for your Slash Gordon. Don't Matter Now is out. It's a brilliant single. Thanks for coming on, and I'm sure we'll see you soon. And also, big love from Ellison John. I believe you're a big fan.
Yeah, a huge fan. I was introduced to them and kind of given a heads up that I might hear my name mentioned at some point. And then I started at the beginning of their podcast. And honestly, I'm convinced the record would have come about 6 months sooner had it not been for podcasts of all shapes and sizes, but theirs in particular.
Ah, George, great stuff. Well, we'll have to get you in to see them at some point soon. George Ezra, thank you so much for joining us. All the best in the new single. We'll see you soon.
Thank you very much. Lovely to speak with you. Have a good night.
Radio.
Radio
X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Oasis, Little by Little on Radio X. This is the Evening Show with me, Gordon Smart, and I'm still joined, I'm very pleased to say, by Danny Wallace, the wonderful broadcaster and author.
Thank you very much.
Yes, Danny.
You made me sound about 90.
No,
like Michael Parkinson.
That's a good thing to be, isn't it?
It is. I enjoy that.
Here's authority for a man of 37 or 8.
I'm 40 now.
The 4-0.
Yeah.
How did that go?
I thought you were going to say, how did that happen? I just waited. No, it was nice, actually. It was all right. It was just me and my children saying, well, I suppose it's my birthday,
yep.
And then giving me a small selection of drawings that they'd done.
Disappointing gifts from the children.
I'm far enough away at the moment that I could say yes.
That, yeah.
But no, it's a delight, Gordon.
Danny, you've got a book about rudeness.
I do.
And you come to a conclusion called the Wallace Report, really, which is a way to sort of understand what you've come up with during the book. And if you could summarise that very briefly for us and the good people of Radio X, what conclusion have you come to about rudeness?
Well, I wanted to see where we are at the moment with rudeness and whether it's just me, whether I'm going through some kind of breakdown where I'm taking it all too seriously. Yeah. And so I commissioned a survey, a poll, 2,000 people all around Britain about rudeness. I discovered some interesting things. One of the weirdest things I discovered was that, you know, like, if someone is rude to you, you feel like you want to get your own back. You want to be rude to them and you want to sort of get your status back. And I found that with the hot dog lady. Yeah, and yeah. Part of me getting my revenge on this hot dog lady was to commission a survey all about rudeness and indeed, you know, how long people would be willing to wait for hot dogs. So I would have that information to hand. But I found that revenge is a really big thing for Brits. Mm. I think something like 47% of men and 50% of women have really been desperate to take revenge on people. And when they have, it gets into some quite dark territory. Like the things that they have done when someone has slighted them in some way.
Yeah.
It goes from little things like changing someone's Netflix password or licking a sausage that they then served to the person.
Oh, yeah.
To much darker things like slashing tyres or grassing on them at work. One person slept with someone else's partner as revenge for a bit of rudeness.
Yeah.
So we take it very, very seriously. I'll tell you something. I haven't told anyone. It's in the book, but that's not out yet. So this is an exclusive for 2 days. Newcastle is our most vengeful city.
Really?
Yeah. They're crazy for revenge, it seems, according to my research. At any one time, almost one in four Geordies is actively plotting someone's downfall. And that's true.
Alan Shearer, yep. Cheryl Cole, yep. Anton Deck, one of those four right now.
One of them's up to something.
Yeah.
And they can't wait.
Yeah. Well, that's a great... I've learned so much from the book already. One of the things I thought was really interesting was if an old lady spilt stuff out of a bag from a doorway, 15% of people wouldn't help if there was an annoying noise at the same time, like a lawnmower.
Yeah, they've done all this research about the city and about how we are distracted and how if there is a big noise going on, we will think someone else will deal with it. I think it's something like 85% of people, if it was quiet, would see an old lady at the top of some steps and she's dropped her bag and all the shopping's gone everywhere. Yeah. You would run to help. There are people listening now who feel the urge to run and help her. But if there's a lawnmower nearby, that drops right down to about 15%. We just can't do it. We can't get involved.
You live in America now. Are Americans more rude than Brits? Or
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. That's what I think. There's a lot of passive aggression going on. People are very happy to sort of chip into your day for no reason whatsoever and maybe tell you off. People don't say thank you when they're driving. That winds me up every single day.
I was really insulted in America when I ordered a second bottle of wine and the waiter gave me an Alcoholics Anonymous card.
No!
It was fine when I headbutted him.
Yeah, that's good. That's the appropriate response for a Scot.
Danny, the book is out. When is the book?
Thursday it comes out.
Right. Yeah. I highly recommend it. I'm already about 200 pages in and I think it's going to be a rip-roarer. It's brilliant. I'm going to learn a lot from it.
Well, you'll see what happens with the hot dog as well.
Danny, I want you to stay for another hour. There's a lot I want to ask you about. I want to know about LA and all the rest of it, but I'm going to push you for a Slash Gordon, if you don't mind. There's a book I'm writing about the most famous people I've bumped into in urinals. And I want to carry it on as a chain. You have been at Radio X. You've been on TV a lot. You've written books as well. You've been in LA. You must have a great Slash Gordon for us.
I once expelled excess fluid while standing directly next to John Hurt.
Oh.
And I'll tell you, he's got a lovely chuckle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he is not bothered by the fact that you're both expelling urine simultaneously.
Yep.
He's happy. His neck would always, you know, well, I mean, I don't know how I can say this. There's a reason he was the elephant man.
Danny Wallace, thank you very much indeed for painting a picture of John Hurt that we weren't aware of before.
Well, that's my gift to the nation.
It's a great Slash Gordon. The book's superb. All the very best with it. And safe travels. You're back to LA next week, aren't you?
A couple days, yeah.
Danny, you're welcome anytime you like. It's been a pleasure seeing you.
Tell you what, it's 40 minutes past 8. I've got that wrong. It's 20 to 9 on the mighty Radio X. And that man is Gordon Smart.
Radio. X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
That was a bumper Evening Show podcast. I'm Gordon Smart and I'm with producer Vin. And we're both going to have a very long lie down after that week. It's been
separately.
Special. What?
Radio X.